Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the island paradise known as New Zealand, a.k.a. Aotearoa, a.k.a. just really, really just crap place, you know? Like, this just sounds very insulting, doesn't it? It's a good place to start, though, isn't it? Hey, speaking of New Zealand, it's a disgusting news circle here, all right? And I know that doesn't sound like an isolated incident. Look, there's a point here. When you look at the New Zealand mainstream media, if you're intelligent and you have a temper, it's a risky endeavor. You know? You just comb over the stuff. And I only just did this before the show, just kind of like a test. I was like, I wonder if this will work. And here's the test. You run over a news website and you look for headlines that are relevant. You know, something that's like kind of big, but also you just reading into the headline itself, you know there's got to be a hell of a lot of BS in it. You know, you're looking for specifically, oh my God, this article's bound to be full of BS sort of things, you know, and that would be things about the economy, vaccines, and you know, a lot of conspiracy stuff, more or less. I guess I'm pretty biased in that reserve. But sure enough, there's only actually, on a major, well, the most major New Zealand news website, the New Zealand Herald, I only found three. And all the rest I classified as kind of irrelevant, you know, in terms of actual importance. And I find that's what's... isn't that what's interesting about conspiracies? People aren't actually involved in them unless they're important. This has got something to gain from it. Now, because things are run by roundtable groups, how exactly can I quantify that statement? You know, imagine that there's like new listeners here, like who don't know that there's a new world order, you know, who don't know about ruthless criminal sociopaths, you know, who don't know about creating money out of thin air, who don't know about corrupting the legislative process and just how cheap it is. It's extremely good business to lobby government, because guess who controls the purse strings of everybody's forced taxable income? You know, hey, I want some government contracts. Well, why don't you just, I don't know, give a couple $1 million to a lobbyist or something like that, and they'll like schmooze and cozy up to all the guys who give up all the contracts over, you know, dinner and wine and small children, and you know, Bob's your uncle. You got the contract, buddy. $3 billion to make an aircraft that doesn't fly. Isn't that brilliant? No, I'm just kidding. It wasn't that much. It was actually more like $40 billion. There was this article this one time. $40 billion development on an aircraft that is crap and nobody wants. Could even be more. Who knows? Who cares if it comes to that point? You can't even fathom what $1 billion is. Most of us can't even grasp $1 million and what it can do. Sweet mercy. You know, like, quibbling over the details. I find that happens a lot. But anyway, back to this kind of, like, news analysis, you know. Like, these are the articles I picked out. First one is, English gets surplus after all, but victory is spoiled. Now, who's English? He's a New Zealand politician. He's, like, the finance minister of New Zealand, right? Just like, I don't know. What does it require to be a finance minister in any kind of country? You know, you've got to know a lot about business. Well, the way I know that, I know a lot about business. I know that it's controlled. I know that a handful of companies really control the economy. So any kind of postulation that there's some kind of economic freedom or that people are going to lift themselves out of poverty by their bootstraps is like lifting yourself off the ground by standing in a bucket and pulling yourself off the ground by the handles. It's just not going to happen, brother, because there's somebody else who's holding you down. The debt to all the bankers. How many hundred years is it since we've had a jubilee? Imagine that. Call off all debts. The whole world just whoosh, wipe the slate clean. It's like, you know, all this fake money that we made up out of thin air, yeah. And you know how it's like numbering into the quadrillions of dollars of fake debt? Yeah. And you know how the only thing that gives that fake debt any weight or any meaning is the fact that we pretend that it exists? Yeah. Well, why don't we just pretend that it doesn't exist, bro? You know? What a brilliant idea. Take everything back to zero. Like in Fight Club. But of course, it'd be much better if, you know, buildings didn't have to get destroyed in order to accomplish it. Everybody just go, hey, we're in too much debt. There's no end to it. More money gets getting created all the time. And it's going to result in a giant economic depression, which millions of people could starve to death in. Or we could just forgive the debt. Everything goes back to zero. The people who are rich are still rich. The people who are poor are still poor. It's just nobody's got all that extra debt on them. You know? And you start again. Maybe in 100 years when it goes out of control again, do another jubilee. Have that nice little cycle in there. That'd be a cool law, don't you think? During the last year of it, you know, before the centennial jubilee, everybody's like maxing out their credit cards, taking out personal loans, and the banks are like, ah! What the hell? Because it's all fake money anyway. I don't think people actually get the grasp of this. Because, you know, when you have to, like, work, you know, I you have to do certain amount of hours, you're getting paid by the hour, or you're getting paid by the salary, and you have to have all these responsibilities and be there at a certain time in order to get that coin, right? Now, the world of finance is a little bit different to that. So instead of having to get out of bed and do something, you can tap a few keys from a phone virtually. Maybe as long as you've got somebody's signature, and create virtually as much money as you want. And that's as simple as it is. No wonder the game is very difficult to win. No wonder people are always bragging about their surpluses. Because it doesn't exist. And the only thing that gives it power is that we're pretending that it does. And you noticed how value has shifted. People don't get taught to value certain things anymore. You know, isn't that what the old people have been saying for everybody's life? Ah, you guys got the only values or anything. So it's a generational thing. Over generations and generations, the values have actually consistently gotten worse. And some say that this debate has been going on for ages because Socrates and Plato had this debate. Oh, you're young and disrespectful, uncouth, rustic. I'm not going to be listening to anything you say, mate. You've definitely got to grow up. And then you fast forward to 2002, 2015, 2035, whatever the F year, there'll always be some old dude telling some young whippersnapper that he needs to grow up. Have you noticed that nobody actually ever gets grown up? There's no freaking benchmark, is there? How can you tell if you're having a conversation with a grown-up? All right, just, you know, quantify. Is it an age thing? No, it's certainly not, because there's a lot of people who are grown up who just aren't grown up. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's getting down to these labels here, because you're not just dealing with reality. I think that's kind of the part about growing up that I identify with, is that now you don't ignore reality. You start to deal with reality. The reality that money is fake. The reality that the elections are virtually a farce. However legitimate the voting process might be, even if they aren't physically rigged, there's still an enormous disparity between the amount of media coverage that happens with the mainstream parties, who are both two different flavours of collectivism. who wind up soaking up most of the votes, and the rest of them get soaked up by a number of other parties who also represent some other form of collectivism. There isn't any choice to be an individual anymore. There isn't any illusion that is big enough for you to have an excuse anymore. I mean, think about that. How big is that illusion? You've been living your entire life, and I'm just coming to this realization right now as we speak. I've been living my entire life thinking that money has real value that is backed up by something. It's because I've always been given something in exchange for it. Except when it gets stolen. Now, speaking of theft, what do you reckon theft really is? It's when you take something from somebody else, you didn't ask for it, you just took it. Now, isn't taxation theft as well then? It's like, yep, we didn't ask for it, but we got it, and we can't argue the point. For the large part, some people have figured out the free man route in order to how to get out of this, but in order to get out of paying your taxes, you have to wind up going to prison, losing your house, losing your family, losing your car, losing your boat, having a bad credit rating, and then virtually having no way to identify yourself, so there's a whole bunch of things that you can't do. But you get free utilities and tax-free existence out of it, you know? Or at least that's how it's been for some people who've been successful. The system is not going to just let people kind of get away with it unless they're not posing a real direct threat to them anymore. You know, sometimes they just let you go. Say, all right, you've had your fun, we'll leave you alone. But you know implicitly that if you start causing a ruckus, start doing something really, really naughty again, they'll come back. Because the state's always there. That's the problem with the idea of collectivism, is it necessitates an all-powerful state. You know, the problem with an all-powerful state is people who crave unchecked power will gravitate towards it. Predators, thieves, con men, criminals, all wind up getting government jobs. And people wonder why the government acts the way it does. Why it smiles and shakes your hand while it gives you snake oil and then leaves town. It's because they're in a position of power and they feel like they're untouchable. You know, and I'd find it hard to disagree with them. It's quite difficult holding somebody to account, isn't it? It's quite impossible, almost. In fact, the only real success that I've seen in terms of somebody who is actually corrupt for being a fully corrupt scumbag was John Banks, right? Former mayor of Auckland City, New Zealand's largest city, presided over a period where they basically this Agenda 21 push happened, and he's got, hey, we've got 9 councils with all their elected representatives and everything like that. We don't need those. Let's give everything that they used to hold in public trust to massive corporations and these corporate-controlled organizations. Whoosh! That's $43 billion worth of assets there. That's quite nice. Should we have, elections and everything like that? Or maybe even put it to a vote about whether or not the entire region of, like, 1.4 million people actually want this kind of amalgamation? No. Let's just deny the Local Government Act for a second here, which has on record that you have to hold a binding public poll about whether or not people want to be merged in their local municipalities, right? Let's just ignore that. It's just this one time break the law, you know? It's just the once. The brazen scumbaggery of it. That's what it's just the level of scumbaggery. It just the mind reels. For somebody with a conscience who's not a ruthless criminal sociopath, this just kind of doesn't make sense. You're like, I can't understand it. And then you think, well, how does a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbag see the world? Let's just put on those goggles for a second. Hey, bro, yeah? Have you ever seen the world like a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbag does? Okay, why no? I haven't. Yeah, chuck these glasses on, bro. Okay. Everybody's prey. I don't feel responsible for anything. All I care about is what I can take. And there aren't any rules apart from what I can get away with. The world's my oyster. In fact, it almost appears as though the world was designed by people who wear goggles like these. See, it's just right in front of your face, just like they live, but you can't see it because there's an interrupting signal, and it's called bullshit. As soon as you have a large quantity of airwaves and websites and television stations filled with bullshit, nobody can tell the difference between the truth and a lie anymore. And you can get away with conning them. It's pretty straightforward. That's why the job of the media is absolutely so important. It's the fourth estate. Supposed to be there specifically, in my opinion, to keep and hold accountable the people who have power. That's it. Because, as I discussed before, when you have unchecked power, corrupt people wind up being interested in having it and get government jobs. Or other jobs where they can get away with crimes. You know? Unchecked power equals corruption. Straightforward, you would have thought. And the only way to keep the very, very most powerful people honest and go to jail for when they do actually commit crimes is if you've got an honest media. So naturally, the powerful people bought out the media. You see how it works? It's almost like you're playing a military game. And there's all this strategy, but the problem is you're up against this really advanced player. Like Kim.com, for example. This dude is like number one in like Modern Warfare or one of those first person shooter games. I don't really have any idea because I don't follow that kind of stuff too much. But what I do recognize is the amount of skill that you have to be, the kind of level that you have to be at in order to rank number one in the world at a very popular game like that. You understand the skill set, right? In any way, shape, or form, you can appreciate the level of achievement. Now, the same kind of level of achievement goes for scumbaggery. For lying. Just because you don't like it or you're not interested in it, doesn't mean there isn't a respectable skill set to be recognized here. Getting scumbaggery down to a fine art, tapered, with just the right amount of flavour, can make people accept damn near anything. And I'm going to try and read this article out here and see if my rash assumptions were correct. English gets surplus after all, but victory is spoiled. If anyone can strongly empathise with Charles Dickens' dictum about happiness, then that person should surely be Finance Minister Bill English. I don't even know what that reference is. Too young. I'll just put it down to that. And don't read. That's a pretty big admission right there. Moving on, it is Mr. Macabre. What the hell is that? M-I-C-A-W-B-E-R. Macabre. And David Copperfield, who utters the famous sum, annual income £20, annual expenditure £19, 19 and 6. Result, happiness. Annual income £20, annual expenditure £20, 0 and 6. Result, misery. In English's case, it is billions of dollars that count rather than long abolished pieces of silver like sixpences. But his margin between happiness and misery is just as narrow, as witnessed by yesterday's release of the government accounts, which showed a $1.2 billion surplus for the first 11 months of the 2014 to 2015 financial year. I'll stop it right there just for a second. What is a surplus exactly? When I'm looking at the New Zealand debt clock right here, and we are like at 96 billion in debt, and about 8 years ago we were closer to 8 billion in debt. Now, here's the thing about financial speculation. When the New World Order takes over a country, they privatize all the state services and whatnot, and they do happen to get that money that was going initially to those state services, hospitals, what have you, and they invest it in the international financial markets. Now, do you know what $1.2 billion, I'm truly just speculating here, but let's say you've got a country of 4 million people and you cut $1 billion from social services in order to get yourself a surplus, and then you wind up gambling that money on the market instead while your people are cold, hungry, etc. Okay, that's the plan. You have to eliminate the middle class. The middle class are the only ones that have any time on their hands and any money on their hands to do anything about corporate takeovers, elections, etc., because there's a lot of them. The poor can't do anything a lot of the time. The rich don't want to do anything. They're too happy. I'm not saying that if you're rich it makes you a bad person, if you're poor or middle class makes you a good person. No, it's not that simplistic. There's always a spectrum and a bell curve. There's extremes on either end, and most people just kind of like cluster around the middle in some form of balance. But you can never really categorize the human being. That's what I've really started to understand now, because if everybody's iniquity, we go into certain groups and categories, sure, but we're never really defined solely to those categories. There's always other sides to people that initially you don't see, but upon further investigation there's a lot more complexity there. Now, when this comes into social services, think about how complex people's lives are. Mate, a couple hundred thousand single mothers drawing benefits or whatever. Doesn't matter what you're talking about here, because it's not about privatizing the economy in the libertarian ideal sense, where you actually have private companies that establish themselves and then start to compete with the government services and what have you at a better rate. No. What it is you still have the government giving these companies all the money to do all the work. So it's not true privatization. What it is it turns the entire marketplace into compulsory customers. You understand? It means you don't have a choice whether or not you buy the service from us. We are the only provider. It is the government granting monopolies to corporations. That's what privatization actually is. And that's why they have these programs in place, to extract wealth, to limit people's rights, and to more or less soften up the country's possible barriers to becoming an integrated society of a global collectivist nature. That's the end goal. Always is. So whenever you hear anybody talking about anything of importance internationally, look at it with the goggles of they're trying to create a world government society based on collectivism the whole time. And it's the only thing that they're really interested in. It's the only thing they ever will be interested in until they get it. Isn't that interesting? Because I have quite a lot of difficulty dealing with the fact that people don't want to accept this very unfortunate reality. I have trouble dealing with it because I understand the threat inherent. Because when your society is at risk because con men and criminals have become the only figures of authority left, then you have to become kind of anti-authority all of a sudden. I think that's kind of a self-evident truth. All forms of authority I don't respect. I respect people who ask me politely and give offers and are unable to engage in a discussion, a conversation with agreed terms of interaction based upon mutual respect. That is not authority, in my opinion. And it's the kind of interaction I prefer to have with somebody who's in a position of authority. Somebody who takes it as a servant role rather than a ruler role. I don't want to be ruled. I don't think anybody really wants to still live with their parents if they had the choice. You know, I'm not, and again, I'm just joking about that. Don't take it seriously. And if you have to take jokes seriously, this might not be the right show for you. There will be a lot of offense caused. I can assure you, it's my solemn vow. I will offend you at some point. Just don't take it seriously, because I don't. The show, I mean, you know. And not myself either, really. That was the financial year. Oh, going back to the article. You know, $1.2 billion surplus in the first 11 months of the 2014 to 2015 financial year. We got us $98 billion of debt, but we saved $1.2 billion. The nerve. The audacity. Oh, I could just imagine him just rocking the babies to sleep. Making sure they're all fed and the economy is well taken care of so they can sleep restfully. I didn't even know if Dickens was Irish. But his margin between happiness and misery. Isn't this really strange? Don't you get kind of caught up in the linguistic... I don't know. The linguistic liquefaction of it all. It's disgusting. Financial years. Does anyone even know what a financial year is? It's like at the end of the financial year, you have to pay all your taxes. Your tax returns, get your GST, money that you've already given the government that you want back. It's kind of invaded every part of our lives, hasn't it? The government's in everything. It's in your food. It's in your water. It's in your air. It's on your phone bills. Your power bills. Everything that you need to survive, the government's kind of trying to take over. Really. And not take over in a like, oh, we're going to protect it, you know, and ensure everybody's safe. No, it's like taking it over as in taking it off you and then selling it to corporations. Like water, for example. Water aquifers all over the world are being sought out by massive corporations at the moment. And they're buying out the water rights. 10, 20, 30 year leases of water rights or even permanent, you know. So, Okay, so you're privatizing all the water. So what happens when people need a drink and they can't afford it? Are you just going to let them die of thirst? And like, and they're like, well, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't we let them die of thirst? It's our water. We paid for it. Fuck them. Die, you scum. You mean the callous nature and the cynical kind of smiling-faced assassin son of a wench adopting the microphone in front of all the bright lights and cameras and just grins at you while he reveals his surplus. And that's not a sexual reference, but it could have been. English and Prime Minister John Key had long been relaxed about hitting the target, but they had to eat their words when it became pretty apparent in the weeks leading up to the budget back in May that, judging from the monthly accounts, National's long-cherished surplus was something that was going to have to be for some future day. What? Oh my God. The fact that they just can't see through it. Hey, in fact, this is exactly what happens all the time, isn't it? You can't even read more than an article in the paper or watch 1 minute of news without exclaiming, oh my God, why is this? Yeah, there's a people are falling for this. Have you caught yourself doing that? You just yell out and you go, oh my God, this bullshit is freaking fallible. Ah! It's like an impenetrable wall of lies and manipulation and distortion and misunderstanding. No wonder people are confused. No wonder people don't have any freaking clue what's going on. No wonder people aren't listening to the radio. Sounds boring, doesn't it? I wouldn't really know because I haven't listened to it in quite a long time. Because I got bored of it. I got bored of listening to the media. I got bored of watching the media. Soon I got bored with reading the media. It's just not exciting enough. Have you noticed that lies aren't nearly as compelling as the truth a lot of the time? And that's what I like from news. I like real, cutting, nasty kind of truth. The kind of stuff that makes you sort of freak out when you go, oh, really, bro? That's a bit rough. Makes you get taken aback. That kind of news I like. Not because it makes me feel pleasant, but because it forces me to adapt to reality. I can't make reality do what I want it to. Well, certain things I can do to influence it, but I can't force the equation. Now, predictably, Key in particular started playing down the importance of the target and how difficult it was to meet it, and that National was close enough anyway. I don't understand why they have these arbitrary targets. It's like they think people are numbers on a spreadsheet. Has been pursued without regard for its human cost. It seems, however, that just as Key and English were trying to hose down expectations, the figures covering tax revenue and spending were suddenly moving back in the right directions. Oh yeah, of course they are. See, here's some interesting statistics at times, although, you know, can never really trust him, but heard one time that for every $30 you invest in government, you get $1 back. Robin Peter, hey Paul, the bureaucracy sucks up most of it. Isn't that stupid? Everybody could just spend money on what they want to spend money on, and you wouldn't need a massive piggy in the middle bureaucracy to just soak up money, just to be employed in the practice of soaking up money. Like, I work for the tax department. Oh, really? You work for the tax department? Is that another way of saying that you just take people's hard-earned money off them, and yeah, that's your job, actually, to just go to people and not ask them or something, but to tell them and compel them. Hey, bro, you know how there's this thing called money, and you're like, yeah. You know there's a real pain for you to, like, earn it? Yeah. And you know how the costs of everything's going up massively? Uh-huh. Well, I've got some bad news for you, bro. You're like, what? Well, I need to take, like, about a third of whatever you make, you know? Just on the side. And you're like, really? What are you giving me back for it? I go, nothing. Right, nothing? No, it just goes to the interest on the foreign debt, bro. You're like, oh, okay. Can I opt out of it? You're like, no, you can't. So what are my options here? And they go, well, you could pay it. I mean, obviously, you know, that's a good place to start. Well, are there any other options? Well, you could go to jail, where you might get hurt, or most likely it'll just kind of ruin your life, maybe traumatize you for the rest of it, and quite probably lose your family or everything you own. You know, that's also an option. It's on the table. You know, take it or leave it, kind of thing. Yeah, that's about what your choices are. Yeah, okay. Well, I think we'll pay you then. You're like, that's a good choice, son. Okay. Wouldn't it just be nice if conversations were just real honest like that sometimes? You know, there wasn't this dancing around the issues, and people could just be like real straight up like that, you know? It's like, yeah, bro, you're a slave. Yeah, okay. So on the plantation, they used to have their food paid for and, you know, medical treatment and stuff like that. Like, it was considered quite a big responsibility to have some slaves, because you've got to keep them alive. They're your investment, right? Like, yeah. Well, are you going to help me live, you know? You're going to buy all my food for me, pay my rent? Any of that stuff, medical checkups and the whole lot? Oh, well, maybe a tiny bit here or there, but nah, most of the time you just kind of have to work for somebody that makes you think you're free and independent, so that way it doesn't really appear real obvious to you that you're a slave, bro. You go, okay, all right, well that makes a whole lot of sense. Thanks for the transaction, brother. I'll see you at the end of the financial year then. All right, cheers, bro. Catch you later. Conversations with the government. They could be fun. No. No, they can't. Oh, God. Just the overbearing weight of it. That's the problem with thinking. Is that your thoughts almost, they bear this gravitational downpour on you. They pull you down. Maybe that's if you're thinking real negative thoughts. Some people try to avoid negative thoughts, as if that somehow makes them non-existent. Like changing the channel when you see the starving African children. I'll just change the channel, they won't be starving on the other channel. Yeah. Oh man, so easy to lie to yourself. And speaking of lying to yourself, it's even easier to lie to other people, especially if you're a criminal sociopath. In fact, really, it's kind of only easy if you are one. Kind of saying. It seems, however, that just as Key and English were trying to hose down those expectations. You know? Oh, it's all going in the right direction, isn't it? The pair were not to know it, but they were snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. National could hardly start trumpeting something it had only conceded weeks ago was not likely to happen. But National was not the only party tripped up by making assumptions from figures which turned out to be way out of date by the time they were issued. When the figures seemed to suggest pretty unequivocally that the targeted surplus was no longer possible, Labour got stuck into English, accusing him of failing him to deliver on a promise upon which he had staked National's economic credibility. let me just, I'll repeat that phrase again, because it just seems so fucking funny to me. Nationals economic credibility. $96 billion in debt plus $112 billion in off-the-books derivatives debt reported in 2011. Oh, we've got economic credibility up to wazoo! Labor yesterday wisely decided discretion was the better part of valour and took the unusual step of not issuing a press statement. Two bunches of... I don't know, isn't it like some kind of children's song being made up? Two bunches of collectivists sitting in a tree. Duh. I want to come up there. Yeah, but you're an individual. You're not allowed up here. Go down. Now stay down there, bro. Now don't try and climb the ladder. Now there's just no room up here for you, bro. No. No, we're not going to share the power. No, you can't have any of the tea or biscuits. No, no, you're not going to be allowed to breed even down there. No, you're going to have to take the microchip, bro. No, just don't argue. Just take the microchip, all right? Just get it down your son. We put it in pill form, all right? So one night you think you're taking ecstasy, but you're actually swallowing a GPS tracking thing that has a biometric skin and readout on you. And we can track you from space. All right, son. Will that help you reach for the lasers? Will this be part of your disco experience? No. No. No room at the table. You can freeze to death. You can starve to death. You can die of thirst. You can get a bad vaccine reaction. We don't care. Just stay down there and die as soon as you possibly can. Please. But make sure you pay us and give us all this food and all these luxuries and everything that we're enjoying just so that you can survive in the meantime while you run on a freaking hamster wheel while we're living the life of Riley. You understand, son? You kind of getting the picture from down there? You're like, yeah, I kind of understand, all right. Unexpected result down to more tax and less spending. The latest monthly crowd... wait a second. More tax and less spending? It's like having a noose around your neck and a plastic bag over your head. That's what you're doing to the economy when you tax and when you tax more and spend less. Okay? You're not releasing the right kind of liquidity. There's no oxygen for it to breathe. What you're doing is you're shrinking the whole economy in order to make some kind of fictional figure come up in the positive area for you. And when the opposition hears about it, they just don't say anything because they were trying to talk it up the other way. Everything's a lot more annoying when it's detailed, you know what I'm saying? It'd be nicer if everything was simple and wasn't layered in lies. It didn't take an hour to decode a simple one-page article. for the love of for crying out loud. The Crown accounts for the 11 months to May recorded a $1.2 billion surplus, almost $1 billion more than was forecast in the budget. The figures indicate Finance Minister Bill English could yet record the full year surplus he was targeting, despite May's budget forecasting a $648 million deficit. The full year figures will be known in October. There is always some volatility in the monthly Crown accounts, and we won't know for some time if there will be a full year surplus in 2014 and 15. He said it indicated the government was on track to anchor Crown debt at low, sustainable levels. I'm going to punch up something right here. The New Zealand debt clock. Because for crying out loud, they're not reducing the debt. It just keeps going up. It's unbelievable. It's beyond a joke, you know. Oh man, we're almost at $100 billion in debt. 4 million people own $100 billion. 4 million people owe $100 billion. 4 million people owe $100 billion. It's 22 grand a pop. Nobody's got any assets. It's 150 New Zealand dollars of interest per second. And in case you're in the United States, that's $66 billion US dollars for like 4.5 million people. Yeah. Just kind of sink that in for a second there. Yeah. It's like 15 grand a pop. And other places are much, much worse and everything. And that's people's argument, counter-argument to it. Oh, but your debt's only $100 billion. Ours is a trillion. It doesn't make it any better. What it means is we're both being shafted, one with a larger penis than the other. There's not that much of a margin for error. We're all being shafted. Like a freaking gold mine. Ah. And it comes down to the fact that we don't have a freaking choice. 154 New Zealand dollars of interest per second. That was just like a grand. Just that pause right there. Sweet mother of mercy. 38% of our GDP. It's like nearly $5 billion a year in interest. Come on, son. See, is anybody fucking home? They forecast a surplus. They get their surplus. And then the country's debt only rises by like $15 billion or something like that for 1 year. Do you know what that's called? I don't. But I know what it is. They go, hey, what our projected debt is going to be is X amount of billion dollars. So if we reduce our projected debt by just that much, we still get into like 99% as much debt as we were going to anyway. But we save this little smidgen right here, and we call that a surplus. And we're going to tell everybody that it's a real shiner. It's just so freaking beautiful that I'm just gonna throw it out there, okay? I'm gonna show it around, like pop it out my wang in public, just wave it at you. Woo! These people are out of their freaking minds, and the public have been so dumbed down by such inept journalism that they believe it. You know, and it's the exact same thing. How many times do I have to repeat that exact same statement? It's the exact same thing in every country, okay? You take what you know and you multiply. You look at what is happening in your own country. They'll have their own representatives of the same kind of BS, same sort of institutions, same sort of civil liberties violations, same sort of economic scumbaggery, same sort of massive debt bloated banks, the whole nine yards. It's weakening countries. So that they can be forced into a crisis so that you can justify destroying the countries outright forever in perpetuity by wiping out their sovereignty with trade deals and world government. I guess it's kind of like, is it a scare tactic to tell people what's actually going on? Because I get accused of fear-mongering. I'm not telling you to be afraid of it. Heck, if I was trying to get you to be afraid of it, I wouldn't be making such awful jokes alongside it. You know what I'm saying? You know who's really... I mean, I'm just reading the news and explaining how it's BS to you. You know? And over here, Fran O'Sullivan. Oh, God. This is another interesting little writer from New Zealand. And you probably have equivalents of this. And... Just kind of sticking up for the establishment. You know how every sort of branch of the government or establishment ideology or Keynesianism or economics or theory or whatever the hell, they all have their little trumpet masters in the media who kind of, shall we say, they do their dirty work for them. They sell their lines for them. That kind of thing. Yeah, sort of. Exactly what I'm talking about. And it says, China's woes spark fears instability could hit New Zealand. Oh no, there's this international market, etc., that we're now inextricably tied up with because of our free trade agreement with China, and it's threatening our New Zealand economy, but the TPA is a really, really good idea. I mean, other free trade deals have been really, really good. Like the one Mexico signed that wound up tripling the price of corn, which 97% of people use as a staple diet. You know? I can just put real, nasty, unfortunate facts in one sentence that have more meaning and more connotation than entire articles written by people who love the establishment and do not question the orthodoxy. And are just selling fear porn and not telling the real truth about how a business and all of this kind of thing works. And they'll say, oh, well, Vinny, you're unprofessional. You don't even run a business. Look, you don't need to run a business in order to know what being stolen from feels like, son. All you got to do is just figure out, oh my God, my watch isn't on my frickin' wrist anymore. Some person must have fiefed off with it. And it was a banker in a top hat and coattails. And a little bow tie as well. He's kind of on his way to a luncheon. Really important meet-up and the ball afterwards. With like seven young girls waiting for him at a penthouse. You know, just shipped them in from Slovakia. And fantastic. Got the receipts from Dyncorp and everything. Little collars around their neck, you know, they're really obedient. You can do anything you want. Anything. Sorry, TV show, real famous TV show, I think maybe Daryl showed me, in the UK, talking about how politicians are raping kids, you know? And why can't we talk about it? That, you know, and it's because for decades and decades, nobody wants to talk about it. And that's why they continue to get away with it. Isn't that about right? You have to have the uncomfortable conversations in order for the bad things to stop. Because sometimes you don't really have the stones to stand up to it, but eventually you just get pushed too far and you have to push back. You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the vinnyeastwoodshow.com on American Freedom Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio 4 days a week. Now, just bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you like it and you want it to continue in perpetuity, go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news, and make a huge donation. $10,000. You know, just give us a couple of bucks, a month, that'd be lovely. And it has been. There have been so many people who have been supporting me for years and years and years. Like five. And it's been quite helpful in every aspect of my life to be able to focus my energy on exposing scumbaggery and not have to do what other people do, is like juggle a full-time job and things like that and only expose scumbaggery in their off hours. And they, you know, can't handle the workload. You know, it's a lot of work, and you cannot really handle a job and do a full-time radio show. It's just, it's exhausting. Far too exhausting for a man to keep up for long. Anyway, I was talking about the old mainstream media, just brilliant, blowing things out of proportion, hyping fear and everything. Could people pay attention to things that they're afraid of? You know, have a look at this. It's sort of all right. It's okay. It's sort of fun. And you're like, yeah. I don't know. Somebody says, hey, look at this. It's going to freaking kill you. And you're like, oh, really? Whoa. It's just a marketing technique, isn't it? At what point, you know, exactly, did journalism become more marketing than journalism? And it's a good question as well. Are we trying to shape your perceptions? Oh, yes. Dig this. Fran O'Sullivan out of the New Zealand Herald. China's woes spark fears instability could hit New Zealand. Oh no, the instability! We'll be put out on the streets with poor Chinese workers who get paid $1 an hour won't be able to have a job anymore! And that could affect us! It could be terrible for the marketplace! The sky's not falling. Well, I tell a lie. It's coming down in spades. The extent of the Chinese share market collapse is now testing the ability of Beijing to moderate the, quote, invisible hand of the market, end quote, by the, quote, visible hand of government, unquote. Chinese regulators yesterday blamed, quote, panic settlement and irrational sell-offs for the plunging share markets, which have led to trading halts called on nearly 3,000 companies. Like, oh, there's some instability on the market. We're just not going to trade your stocks anymore. You might have AIDS or something. But the more fundamental question is whether it is rational to expect Chinese government measures like suspending IPOs and making it easier for investors to meet margin calls will bring an end to the current instability. Oh, really? Like the current instability that gets reported on every single day? In every part of the globe? In every single way? Because the entire economy in the whole world has basically been taken over by a central spider? It has this all in its well-controlled web? Maybe that's why it's in constant crisis? You know, I'm just taking a stab in the dark. I'm just speculating. Like Wall Street does. The market reaction has posed a major challenge I've always wondered how to pronounce Chinese names. You know how it starts with an X? You know? Is it Xi Jinping? Or is it Xi Jinping? I was going to call him Xi. It's spelled X-I. It's Xi. Because it's extra sexy. And his last name was Jinping. That's actually quite a cool name, actually. Sounds like some kind of... Why is it that through the brainwashing mechanisms of kung fu movies, every Chinese name sounds like he could kick your ass? You know? This is Mr. Xi Jinping. Oh my god. He could probably snatch my heart out of my chest, bro. See? I don't know where that comes from. Or why? But anyway, when questioned on whether the Chinese government could work the switch to a more true free market environment without ensuing chaos, Xi expressed confidence to his government's visible hand to moderate the market's invisible one. The concern now is that Beijing's inability to quell the rest of market could spill over into wider financial and domestic political risks. Really, you don't say. The world's most emerging super economy is, falling to balls in the shit house, and it might affect other people. You don't say. Where did 90% of the stuff that's around you come from? From frickin' China! So guess what happens when they have a hiccup? You got flatulence, you know, for reals. There's a relationship here, you know. That's the problem with an interconnected economy when nobody's insulated, nobody has their own resources, and nobody keeps to themselves in terms of independence, like how everybody's all in it together. So if one person goes down, it's like a domino effect. However, sometimes if one person goes down, there is no domino effect, but there's nobody there to really save them or bail them out. That would be the logic. No, because there's shockingly large amounts of charities and things of that nature for everybody all around the world who are like raising money for countries and stuff. If they weren't all funded by the banks, it'd be quite nice because they're just getting it for the tax exemptions that they love so very much, because although they love everybody getting taxed in order to pay the interest on the foreign debt, they don't like paying any tax themselves. So they write the legislation that exempts them from having to pay any form of tax while they get paid by the taxes of the people that they're indebting with money that they made up out of nothing. It's quite a clever plan, don't you think? You know, because anybody would look at that and just go, that sounds crazy. Of course it does. That's why you don't suspect that it's real. You don't reckon vampires and werewolves are real, do you? Nah, because they sound like they're fictional. I wonder if they actually are real. You know, if all this conspiracy stuff actually really is, if it's not like 100% true, there's always like at least something to it, you know. If it's not what people are claiming it as, there's got to be something. I wonder where all the legends and stuff for like vampires, werewolves, and all these mythical creatures and everything came from. Do you reckon at some point in human ancient history, there used to be creatures that allegorically sort of embodied a lot of those characteristics of these creatures that we know in myth today? You know, like not quite so extreme, just sort of normal, but a little bit messed up. And now we elect them, we call them leaders of countries, we call them CEOs. What if all the monsters and monster stories were real? But the monsters evolved over time into us and figured out how to conceal themselves from the ones who weren't like them and learned how to seek out positions of power so that they could continue all their nasty little habits of drinking human blood and humping people's legs in perpetuity and in line with their evolutionary standpoint of eugenics, which is dehumanizing everybody who isn't me and trying to exterminate all of those people as well, because, you know, it's very difficult to kill a person if you think of them as a person. So much easier if you think of them like a rodent. You know? You give somebody a hammer and you say, hey, there's this rodent that's stuck in a trap. He's suffering. I need you to pop the hammer on that mouse's head and split his skull and kill him. I need you to put him out of his misery. And they go, no, it's cruel, it's horrible, I can't do that. It's like, okay. And then some people will just go, all right, well, fair enough. And then you get the same hammer to that person and say, here's a baby, and it's inferior because it's black. And we need you to kill it, pretty much. You're like, okay, no worries. After generations of brainwashing and programming, or even just the childhood of it, you can be taught to hate any kind of form of life, I think, by inhuman psycho scum. It can just make you hate a form of life. For no other reason than it's a little bit different to you. You know, it doesn't have any intrinsic value, does it? You know, life, a heartbeat, neurons firing, a soul, whatever. If every human life doesn't have value, somebody else gets to tell you which life gets valued. You're not going to be heading in a good direction, son. Probably heading in the opposite direction to something you would like. The concern now is that Beijing's inability to quell the rest of market could spill over into wider financial and domestic political risks. Commodity markets are also being affected. Now, I love this kind of like real simple language that doesn't actually explain any effing thing. For example, the sentence, commodity markets are also being affected. Oh, really? Anyway, how many people know what a commodity market is? I actually don't know. I mean, I can make guesses and stuff like that, but in terms of understanding the entire organism of it, which is what you'd have to actually expect of your audience when you just use a straightforward sentence like that, you know, or even just the word commodity market and reference something that's happening in it, you'd have to expect that people know what a commodity market it is, but I bet you most people don't. You go to them on the street, hey, shove a microphone in your face, bro. You know what a commodity market is? Is it a market for commodities? Why, yes it is, you smart ass. Do you actually know what it is? Oh, nah, bro, I don't tell you. And you don't, see? I tell you. This will be of concern to Finance Minister Bill English, who is poised to begin a visit to China. English was in Beijing recently for the signing ceremony to launch the China-led Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. Oh my god. I will repeat that sentence again because it just sent a chill down my spine. You know how that's the problem of reading news, is you learn about stuff that you don't know, and it sounds really freaking scary to you because you know a whole lot of crap like it that's been proposed in the past. So just the image of it just brings back all these memories like, oh my god, it's not that one again. China-led Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. CLAIIB. Is that the clique? The Claib? Or the Clab? Yeah. Nah. The Clib? The Crib? I don't know. They've really got to suss out the acronyms. No, seriously, there was quite something very interesting that I saw today when I was talking to Gia with Griffin. I was just interviewing him for my documentary. Yes, the documentary's still being made. In the background, in addition to doing a television show and a radio show and going out and filming people's things on the weekend to get a little bit of extra money for the house and the rent and all of that kind of things, I am also making a documentary. I am Superman. Anyway, there's this great thing on, you know, ISIS, the the militant stuff. Well, I saw this thing. We were looking up the Council on Foreign Relations references, and in New Zealand, it's called the Royal Institute for International Affairs, our local version of the Council of Foreign Relations. Same name in the UK, actually, Royal Institute of International Affairs. And Malaysia's got one. They've got the Institute of, you'll love this, Institute of Strategic and International Studies, ISIS. And it's got a shot of Hillary Clinton on it. I think it was one of their articles up there. The US must not flip-flop on free trade. It's mainstay. Free trade. This is what marketing has done to language. I'm going to destroy your country, probably get a lot of people killed, and more or less set up the framework by which I can usher in direct control of governments by corporations. And we call it, what do we call it? I don't know, Jimmy. Jimmy, have you been working on, what are you doodling here? Is this a hairy vagina? Jimmy, you're supposed to be paying attention. This is serious financial business we are getting into here. We need to come up with a great freaking word or something to disguise the fact that we're setting up a totalitarian world government to enslave people, their economies, and their countries. Are you paying attention? Okay. Come on. Give me something. I'm totally at a loss, mate. Yeah, well, what do we call it? Free trade? Free trade, you say? You know? That sounds actually nice. Free? Because it sounds like it's not us ruthlessly taking over the stuff. And trade? Makes it sound like they're actually getting something back for their investment. Jimmy, you can go back to drawing your hairy vagina. Good job, sir. See, this is exactly what happened, right? And I wasn't making that up. I was reading that in a transcript from the Royal Institute of International Affairs. I'm not kidding. Well, of course I'm kidding. Taking that seriously. Yeah. Well, it's just basically roundtable groups, really powerful, influential people in your country get invited to these little meetings, invite only, of course. And what we do there, apart from the fact that it's a secret, generally what we do is we influence foreign policy in order to make sure that everybody eventually winds up with a world government based on collectivism. Okay? Pretty straightforward. Not a lot of wiggle room. And everybody's got their own little representative branch of it. That's the reason why the conspiracy is so easy to hide, because it's got so many little veins and so many little representative faces that you think that they're all separate. But they're just, it's like, have you ever seen, I think I saw a Chinese performer one time at this amazing show, The King of Mask, or it might have even been a Chinese movie, in fact. How he had so many masks on his face that you didn't even know if you could even get down to the bottom one. He was just like taking them off. You know, amazing skill involved here. A multi-faced demon that is present in everybody's country, masquerading as something of officialdom, clawing in all the good people that have power and influence, and just lying to them and getting them involved in things that they ordinarily wouldn't like if they truly understood what was going on. And then also tell them to ignore shows like this or refuse to go on them because it might, I don't know, break the programming, shall we say. English and Treasury Secretary Gabriel Maklov, who was also on the trip to China, by the way, aware that if the instability spills over, it could also impact on the New Zealand economy. The Chinese government is a significant buyer of New Zealand government bonds. Yeah, aren't they Chinese a significant buyer of almost every government bond? Isn't it interesting? You've got a big criminal banking cartel that is getting every country into debt. In order to bail the country out of debt, they sell it to foreigners like the Chinese and still maintain control of the world somehow through debt. I don't know if that... In fact, I'm definitely getting it wrong. But more importantly, China has hoovered up many of New Zealand's agricultural exports and is the source of a great deal of our tourist trade. It's absolutely true. Yeah. Chinese tourists in New Zealand are really cool. They're very, very polite. They don't litter. Mate, there's actually, come to think of it, they're a lot better than some of the European tourists that I've seen, man, who are like just out of control. And again, there's a bell curve and a spectrum. There's extremes on either side, but most people cluster into the middle with some kind of balance. I need to repeat that. Have you noticed how every single time you make a statement, there's three meanings to it? What it is, what it definitely isn't, and what it could be misconstrued to mean. And unless you mention all three things and point them out, people will often misconstrue things, think that it's something that it's totally not, while some people will just kind of understand it and won't say anything. They'll be like, oh yeah, I get it. Interesting. One of those facts about communication. If the turmoil knocks domestic confidence and with it internal domestic demand, there will be a spillover effect. Spillover. It's like we're in a sinking ship together. It's like, oh, the side of their ship's spilling over. We better get to the life raft. Conveniently, we're on an island paradise nation that, apart from the chemtrails, you can grow food in. Still, you know. We'll survive. We'll be like, I don't know, Cuba. Everybody will be driving around in the 1985 Toyota Hiluxes and everything in like 2050 or something, you know. And we'll figure out how to fix everything and make everything keep running forever while the New World Order scumbaggery just kind of like runs our lives and surveils everything from satellites and what have you and just kind of like leaves us be. Literally, New Zealand will be like the escape from Absalom or something. It'll be fantastic, you know. Margarita parties every night of the week. Creative use for cannabis. Here we go. I thought I'd get one in one article before the end of the show that didn't scream of wankery. A creative use for cannabis in Whanganui and an unhappy drink-driving pet owner in Hawke's Bay are just two of the stories making headlines around the regions today. A Whanganui artist has a unique reason for growing thousands of dollars worth of marijuana. Marijuana, by the way, is the Mexican slang term which William Randolph Hearst made popular because he had a whole lot of forestry investments which Pancho Villa and Mexicans took over. And they used it as a very obscure slang term for cannabis. It means Mary Jane or marijuana. Just a little interesting factoid there for you. Racism and control of the press. Don't you just love it? How effing easy it is to prohibit something that everybody was growing in their backyards and almost everybody in the entire world at one point in history was using on a regular basis in one form or another. Pretty straightforward. A Hastings drink driver who damaged a police cell says he did it because he was angry and wanted to go home to his kitten. You know, nothing screams real sensitive man who wants to go home to his kitten than damaging a police cell, you know, while you're drunk. As if it justifies. I'm being judgmental here, aren't I? Alright, it's fun, I enjoy it. The threatening behaviour of players and supporters at a Bay of Plenty rugby game has shocked a spectator. Horses have apparently been going missing in Rotorua, and some owners are taking matters into their own hands. In Whangarei, the council has been forced to apologise to a businessman for demanding $10,000 in storage costs for a truck it wrongfully seized. Didn't that suck, man? You like go back to your truck and you're like, bro! Where's my truck? Some shafty schlong has taken it. You know, 10 grand. Took man's truck for no reason and then demanded them 10 grand to get it back. Who could come up with that? You know, it's like the red tape that's coming up around things. This is what it reminds me of. I could be wrong with the reference, you know. But what's happening with compliance costs, red tape around business and things of that nature, it's forcing them up so much that essentially, unless you're already a multinational mega corporate or a criminal front for something that is tied in with the government, which is incidentally also a criminal front for something, so I kind of cancel each other out, but you can't operate a business, really. I mean, not very easily, at least. And eventually, not at all. There'll be corporations own anything, corporations run everything, and corporations use the government as their rod. Just whoosh, whack you if you don't like it. Because we can. The government. We've got a thing called the use of force, son. What did you think was going to happen? You know? What are you, foolish? Now, I wanted to look at this. Artist grew dope to pay rent. Man, there are a lot of people doing that now, and indeed, a young New Zealand First MP, or budding MP, God, that was a terrible pun, that wasn't even intentional, I'm sorry, got arrested, I think, in April for selling weed. You know? It's a New Zealand first fellow. What was his name? Kerwin Rowlandson. I've had some mixed feelings about Kerwin myself. You know, had interactions, and he's on one of my extensively long blocked on Facebook list that takes quite a long time to scroll to the bottom of. Now, anyway, on with the article. Artist grew dope to pay rent. An artist who was growing more than $100,000 worth of marijuana to pay the rent in his studio also planned to use the roots in his art. You know, dude, sometimes you're just asking for trouble. I mean, that's just, I'm going to grow all this weed and then I'm going to parade the evidence around in my gallery. this is a righteous idea, you know? What could possibly go wrong? I mean, talk about getting rooted by the law. Richard Chan was busted with 200... Oh, no, that was the next line. How did I see that coming? Well, of course, because it's being reported in the news. In addition to the incredibly stupid idea. He was busted with 228 cannabis plants found growing in three separate growing rooms in his London Street studio on August 21st last year. Police searched the premises and found the concealed growing rooms. Judge David Cameron said in Whanganui District Court on Tuesday, quote, as an artist, he wished to use the roots to make Chinese paper, the judge said. Chan, 65, also told police he planned to sell some of the plants to pay for the rent on the studio. Yes, that's a good idea to admit that, bro. Just admit that you're going to be giving, money, giving marijuana in exchange for money that in massive amounts. That'll go down real well when they inflate all of your admitted evidence and use it against you in court in order to frighten you, in order to get you to admit your guilt and everything like that, so they don't have to spend a whole lot of money convicting you. The justice system, man. It just is, and it's just for us. It's justice. Is that not encapsulated pretty straightforward? Anybody ever been arrested? You know, if you haven't been arrested, I recommend it. Okay, you will not like it, but you will start to see things in a different light, because you know it's not fun. Even when they're nice to you, it's not fun. Handcuffs don't feel very nice. Having them behind you. Behind your back while you're in the back of the police car without a seatbelt on while they're screaming down the road. It doesn't feel nice either. Well, not screaming down the road, obviously. But still, I found that very interesting how they can pull people over and give them a fine for not wearing a seatbelt, and then they handcuff their prisoners in the backs of their police cars without a seatbelt on. And just drive down, you know, just full play. You know, who's he going to believe? The four policemen in the car that just arrested his ass? Or him? He's a criminal. He just arrested him. He's just lying, Judge. There's so many lies get told in court by law enforcement, man. That's one of the things that kind of gets me, because cannabis charges are really, you know, they're quite nasty in terms of the crime, you know, which technically based upon a certain definition of a crime without hurting or damaging any fucking thing, you can say that it's not a crime at all to have or to sell or to grow or to display or to use in any fucking way the cannabis plant. It seems that you can't really hurt people with it unless you sharpen it into a spear or something. It's the strongest natural fiber, you know, it'll probably hurt when you dig it into your arm, bro, you know. It's, man, whew, man, that cannabis is dangerous. That's about as rough as it'll get. It can't kill you. You know? It can't. I've tried. All right? I'm just joking. I haven't tried to kill myself with cannabis, you know, because I'm not an idiot. You know? It's just a waste of weed. You just wake up the next day feeling really, really terrible, probably, or something, because you could have smoked that weed later on in the week when there was actually a party on. And you've got to pass the joint round of a whole bunch of people and you know, been their first session they've had in ages or something. You just kind of like talk them into it. We're like a bad influence on them, as you always are, because you're a stoner. That's the kind of thing that works out, isn't it? And I mean, it was quite funny. Thomas Sheridan was making a post about potheads the other day. And they don't have any hobbies and they just want to get stoned all the time, blah, 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 blah. And I was talking about how you got to define what something is, what it isn't, and what it could possibly be misinterpreted as in order to make sure that there's only one message that's being conveyed that can't be taken off track. And I didn't realize he meant potheads, not stoners, you know? Potheads literally got no life. They got nothing to do better than to smoke weed. It's like, oh, bro, you want to go and have a freaking session, bro? It's going to be awesome. And it's the only thing, only hobby, the only pastime. It always has to involve that. It doesn't always have to involve that, man. I mean, jeepers creepers. Certain people have to be, you know, sober for certain operations of their lives. That kind of thing. Be responsible, etc. Take care of things. Do real work. Those people are called stoners who smoke weed, as you should, and just get stuff done, man. You know? No harm caused, no harm done. And why does somebody who's only selling cannabis and hasn't, you know, threatened or intimidated anybody, hasn't broken any other laws, making a little bit of money in a private enterprise, and not paying taxes to a criminal government, which I don't know. I mean, I've been busted for selling cannabis when I was like, I don't know, 10 years ago, when I was like young kid, 20. Oh my god, most painful experience of my life. And I don't like to talk about it because the brain remembers the trauma that it went through, and when you talk about it, it starts coming up in a physical reaction time. And you feel you. And this has happened to other people as well. And this is what police don't realize, is that just being there, just pulling over somebody who has been arrested before or has been like maybe abused by cops or something like that, or busted for something really kind of unfair, you know, or nonsensical, such as, you know, cannabis prohibition. Or any drug prohibition for that matter. You know? Freak. I mean, look. Look what happened in Portugal. Legalized all drugs. Oh my god, it's gonna fuck everything up! You know what happened? Oh, that's right. Half the amount of people getting into hospitals. Half the amount of people going to jail. Half the amount of people that are having health consequences that are negative and associated with it. It's just the way it's supposed to be, isn't it? It's quite unfortunate, but you know, nobody can really do anything to stop it now because they've got the evidence that, hey, it actually freaking works, buddy. We've got all the evidence and it's been in for a long effing time. Though there's nothing wrong with cannabis, the cannabis plant, its extracts, its fibers, and any of that stuff, okay? It's absolutely impossible for us to think that there's something wrong with it. Even, it's stupid to believe that there even need to be safety tests done. You know, it's like, oh, well, we'll legalize it, of course, but first we need to do our safety test for about the next 100 years while we continue to put people in prison. It's a freaking delay tactic! Every time we get close to a joint being free in the streets, being able to be smoked by somebody, some scumbag tells a few lies, and suddenly everybody's so terrified of this thing that has never killed anybody in 10,000 years of recorded use, which incidentally a lot of people need to help them with their rage so that people don't get hurt all the time. Or a cop telling me, you know, oh, well, what about the person who, you know, he's just like making up a fictional character. That's what people do when they don't have any facts, you know. They make up fictional characters and they attach BS to it. Well, what about that person who's going home to their kids or whatever, and they spend money that they should on your kid's food, on your $20 tinny or something like that? And then go, well, bro, what about the person who does it with alcohol? What about the person who does it with cigarettes? You don't punish people for the substance that they're using. You punish the behavior itself by ostracizing them or talking to them. In fact, you don't even really need to punish people. Maybe we've got the whole idea wrong. Maybe government and police's job isn't really to punish people in order to inflict justice, but actually to determine whether or not that person knows whether or not they've done something wrong. And see why they did it. Understand this person and be able to offer them actual correction and life coping skills so that they become a better person after doing this terrible thing. And they say this is jail, this is corrections. No, it's not. It's a place to get traumatized. That's a place to damage you as an individual. That's a place where the amount of positive role models for you to learn off gets severely restricted. Growth and correction of misaligned behavior does not get addressed by corrections departments, does it? If it did, then there wouldn't be such a high reoffense rate, would there? The facts don't match the rhetoric in any sense of the word. The descriptions that politicians are giving cannabis illicit substances.
Oh, it's so illicit. Like I just saw it on in the red light district, and oh, that cannabis looked slutty is what it did. You know, leaves all aflay. Red hair and everything, like the carpet matched the drapes. It was disgusting. Disgusting. People don't even know anything about the subject. Isn't there a fucking epidemic in this country? In every country! It's just this epidemic of commenting on something you know nothing about!
Oh, look, I looked at a headline. I've got an opinion on that headline. And ignore the entire article. Oh, I saw a blurb for a long radio show. I didn't listen to any of the radio show. I just read the blurb, which didn't really have context until I listened to the radio show. But I'm just going to comment about it anyway. See, people want to be able to offer an opinion without having the, shall we say, the substantive work that goes into actually earning the right to do that. And I'm not saying that, you know, certain people don't have a right to offer an opinion. What I'm saying is, if you're going to offer an opinion, have something backing it up beyond a quick glance and then a slash ridicule or dismiss without even looking into it whatsoever. You know, maybe even spend 5 minutes at least. You never know, you might be interested in it. Spend a tiny bit of time understanding something. Is that too much to ask? How many hours do you spend a day on Facebook? How many hours a day do you spend watching television? How many hours a day do you spend playing video games? These are all things that basically soak up a lot of people's time. And sometimes it's squandered because there's things you can be doing where you actually learn something in the process. And not be quite so presumptive about everything. Like me, you know? Can you imagine if you were like me? It'd be terrible. Me laughing at you. Calling you an idiot. Telling you you need to grow up. Yeah, I get that a lot. And anyway. Back to Mr. Chan. My Chan with the cannabis. And I'm looking at some of his artwork now. You know the Chinese paper paintings and things like that. It's like, it's so cool that traditions have lasted that long that you can now replicate something that was pioneered thousands of years ago. I love people with talents like that. That's so cool, man. It's unfortunate, man. Because it's like, dude, this dude's doing nothing wrong. Sure, he grew 110 grand worth of weed. It doesn't actually sound very good when you say it like that, does it? You know, just one of those little pamphlets you pick up at the police waiting room. So, you grew $100,000 of weed and you got busted. You know, this is the process you're going to be going through. You know. Judge Cameron said Chan had a short criminal history with three previous convictions for drug-related offending. The most recent was in 2009. A pre-sentence report assessed him as being at low risk of re-offending and described him as an intelligent man who recently completed a four-year fine arts degree. Chan pleaded guilty to cultivating cannabis and was sentenced to 12 months home detention. 100 grand of cannabis and 12 months home detention. Man. That's... Just think about that for a second. How do you equate the punishment? Because what's interesting here is that, first of all, he shouldn't have been punished in the first place. You know, so what if he's breaking the law? There's no crime unless there's a victim. And second of all, if it's really that bad, and it's a huge amount of cannabis, why 12 months home detention? Like, not even think, you know, that kind of thing. It's because it's cultivation. He hadn't sold it yet. And you know what they do? This is interesting. I'll read out this part to you because I've talked to a lot of people in the cannabis movement who have explained to me the way that cops inflate figures. Here's the sentence. Richard Chan was busted with 228 cannabis plants. Okay, stop. Now, imagine the image that goes through here. Is that 228 full-size, fully laden pound of bud per plant growing operation? No, it's not. You might even be talking about, like, I don't know, somebody I knew, he was busted with 118 plants, and about maybe 12 of them were, you know, budding and producing fruit, okay? And all the rest were like seedlings, little clones and things like that, and they go into rotation. But what the media reports is that it's 118 plants. So I'm not saying I know the exact details on there. Who knows? He could have actually had 228 full cannabis plants. I'm just explaining how sometimes these pieces of evidence get inflated in order to make the bust sound bigger than it actually is. Now, the second part is the weighing of it. So let's say you got 228 plants of varying sizes. Some one's a couple of 6 feet tall and a couple of like little seedlings. They're only about, you know, as big as your pinky finger. They're only just coming out of the dirt. And what they do is they weigh all of that, stalks and all, the big leaves and all of that kind of stuff, all the waste material of this, and then they weigh it, and then they go, okay, how much is this guy going to get for it? You know, and so in some cases, that's what they've done. Maybe a couple of percent of the total weight of the plant is actually the bud that you're going to be selling on the black market. And they weigh the whole thing because $100,000 worth of marijuana to pay the rent sounds a lot more than $12,000 of marijuana that you're going to get to sell and actually have some kind of profit on over an entire year. $12,000 is like, you know, it's actually not that much. It's maybe a couple of hundred a week, and that's just helping you pay the rent, isn't it? Sounds about right that way when you draft it down. Because when this guy gets quoted as like, oh, 100 grand of marijuana to pay the rent, you think that there's actually 100 grand worth of marijuana. You actually think that it's, you know, quite weighty. Is it about 5,000 a pound? You know, is this guy wearing 20 pounds on 228 plants, a lot of them seedlings? I don't think so. And in my personal story, I was caught with 13 grams. and I admitted that I'd been selling for 8 months. So they said that I'd sold $40,000 worth of cannabis. I was just like, what? Like a broke-ass student. You barely pay my rent, and they say that I've sold 40 grand worth of cannabis. Just making it the fuck up, right? And that's the only way that you can enforce the cannabis laws is by overinflating everything about it. Because it's such an innocuous thing that's so ubiquitous with New Zealand culture that nobody cares if you get busted with a couple of ounces. Nobody. That's not newsworthy. Ah, but 100 grand that's actually only 12 grand worth of cannabis. Wow, yeah, that's massive, mate. Just lies. Make themselves look better. Look at us. Look at our feather and our freaking cap. Unbelievable. It's excruciating to me, you know, because I know exactly what it feels like to have that done to you. And one of the most ruder awakenings for a truther, you know, that you could possibly get is getting arrested. And you will hold on to that stuff, and it will be with you for a long, long time. And it comes back up whenever you've got some time to think to yourself. Everybody else has noticed this phenomenon, haven't you? You're suddenly silent all of a sudden. And then wham, there's a little memory of something that really, really pissed you off. Or something a person did to you that was really nasty just comes thundering into your head and you're like, ah, oh, God, ah. You know, you kind of had to yell to get it out of your head. You get that a lot, right? And when you got these bad memories, and again, this comes back to the fact that police don't understand the damage they do to people, or at least the good cops don't understand it. Maybe they do. I don't. Is the point? If you're going to ruin somebody's life, it'd better be for a good reason. There can't just be some flippant justification like, "Oh, he was growing a plant that hasn't killed anybody in 10,000 years. Like, we need to throw that fucker in jail." Jesus! What does he think he is? You don't have any idea how dangerous that is? Growing a plant that's never killed anybody in the recorded history? Like, fuck! Fucking anarchy! I mean, so what if it's got like 138 different applications for several diseases and everything that are made up and maybe even made worse by pharmaceutical medications, which are the only alternatives? So what? So what if it's got 50,000 industrial uses? So what if it'll stop getting all the rainforest cut down? So what if it'll stop oil drilling perpetually? So what if it'll make cancer evaporate into the wilderness and be a distant memory in the golden age of humanity? So fucking what? He was growing marijuana for his rent! Arrest them! Throw him in jail! Oh, we can't throw him in jail? Okay, well, just give him an ankle bracelet then, man. It's just stupid. You got no justification for it? That's the saddest thing I think I've coming to realize is that the justice system has no justification. is that Edward Bernays, man? He goes, all right. If we tell people what we're doing, like probably, and just come out and say, I'm going to manipulate you into feeling insecure, so that you'll buy this car, so that you'll feel good about the size of your wang. And everybody goes, but I don't reckon a car can make me feel better about my wang. What are you talking about, bro? I'm not going to buy you a car. And Edward Bernays comes along and he goes, bro, just tell him it'll make him feel comfortable. And tell him that women will like having a ride in his car, and it'll make him think that it'll make him more comfortable with his wang. You know?
Just think about that, bro. Why don't you try that as a marketing technique?
Marketer goes, you know, that's actually not a bad idea, Bernays. Cheers, brother. So they do an ad like that. All of a sudden, they've got these young foppish dicks coming in and just going, hey, I'm feeling slightly insecure about my dick, and I need myself a motor car, please, to compensate for my insecurity. And I wound up selling a hell of a lot of cars. I was like, oh, damn, all I had to do in order to get a man to open up his wallet was make him feel bad about his dick. It's just so easy. I mean, really. It just cuts to the chase, doesn't it? Because if you're not comfortable with that, you're in trouble, son. And they do it to all of us. The way that they do it to women by putting it in the fashion magazines and everywhere. Oh, she's got too much cellulite. Oh, this one's got the most beautiful body and everything. So it makes all the women feel really bad about themselves because not only are they not as beautiful as the women in the magazines, but also they're watching all these real beautiful women who have got, you know, maybe let it go for a month or something like that while they sat on the couch eating Twinkies and mayonnaise out of a jar with a spoon. Because of a bad breakup, and then you give a crap about it, so it makes you give people crap about their bad day. You know, it's a vicious circle. Make men feel bad about their wang, make women feel bad about being a woman. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a whole big barrel of bullshit that I just don't have time for because there's the music. Thank you so much for listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Please go to the vinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate today or set up a regular payment and a regular subscription. Very much appreciate all the support for everybody has given me over the years, and we will continue perpetually, if that's even a word. See you again.